On this episode of the Teacher Nerds podcast, Joe and Ron welcome back Sean Young, founder and CEO of Classcraft. On Sean's last visit, we discussed a bit about teaching and relating with Generation Z and Alpha, and we dive deeper into this topic on this episode. We also end the episode talking about ChatGPT, what it means for education, and a bit about how educators can use it. Buckle up and get ready to learn with Sean Young from Classcraft. And now, let's get into the show.
About the nerds. What's the word? Teacher nerds. You can tweet them out on Twitter. You can find them on the gram. After listening to their podcast, you'd be sitting there like, bam! Trying to take the teaching from one level to the next. Reaching up to Canada and down to Mexico. Gotta go. Teacher nerds. Start the show.
Welcome back to another episode of the Teacher Nerds podcast. I'm Ron Nober.
I'm Joe DiPaolo.
I am a technology teacher for third grade to eighth grade.
And I'm teaching fifth grade, math, science, and social studies.
And a returning guest with us, Sean Young, the CEO and founder of Classcraft. Welcome back, Sean.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Thanks for coming back. That was a quick return, too.
Yeah, there you go. we just weren't done with our previous conversation.
Yeah, right. And that's it. I mean, that conversation sparked this whole podcast. We're going to be talking about Generation Z and Generation Alpha and like different learning styles and kind of what we need to do as educators to get to understand them so that we can reach them and educate them. So we always start off our episodes with our icebreaker, this or that.
Or that we're playing this, or that playing this, or that on the Teacher Nerds podcast show. Or that, is it this, or that, is it this, or that on the Teacher Nerds podcast show.
And we're going to do board games or online games. And we were talking a little bit before, Sean, I thought I knew which way you were going to go, but I don't think I do now. Well, I think I do now because there are only two choices. But I'm definitely a board game person. I mean, if I have to choose, that's what I grew up with. I think that's what I know. I mean, I'll pick up a game on my phone here or there. But if I was going to play, I would want to play a board game. I feel like the interaction's just different there. So
they're so much better too than when we grew up. Now, like, I don't know, you were playing. When we grew up, we had like Clue and Risk and like Monopoly.
I'm like Candyman. What are you talking?
Monopoly?
All these games were so like unidimensional. You know, you play a game like Risk and it's like every game is the same except randomness of the dice. And you play like Monopoly is literally just going around in circles. Like,
yeah.
Literally. Right. Just like.
For hours.
For, on top of for days. I remember games we played lasted like had to carry over. Like but now board games have gotten so diverse and robust and interesting, like that like some of the more recent like even simple games like Ticket to Ride, for example, is an interesting game because it's I don't know if you know that one, Ron.
No.
It's that train game where you gotta like make trains and it's pretty simple. It's, you know, you just place trains on tracks and everybody's, you know, kind of fighting for, you know, get the tracks first. And it is such an interesting game that you can play again and again and again. But I'm a big board game nerd. I have a lot of board games. Yeah. And it's been like there was a wave of like games in the 2000s of like Euro games. So games coming out of Germany that had like these super interesting like economics and,
oh wow,
and now like, you know, like games, Catan was one of those, like these resource building games.
Yeah
and now like there's just been such an explosion of like different types of games that you can like, you know, it's funny because it's a pandemic game, it's called Pandemic, but these cooperative board games too where you're actually playing against the board together instead of playing against each other.
So,
like in this game Pandemic, you have to collaborate to eradicate global pandemics. And so like you can go from these experiences that are so different in how you relate to other players. So I just like the board game has seen such an explosion in the last like decade. I it's such a fascinating medium.
And I was going to say that's interesting. You would think it would be the opposite almost, right? Like with technology.
No, that's right. Like, yeah, oh, games yeah. should die out or whatever.
Yeah. But
I think that there's, you know, people, games have become a huge part of our culture over the last 50 years. Like 50 years ago, we're in the 70s, board games were, you know, becoming more and more popular, video games. And so like, these are the types of experiences that we want to continue and that we know how to do and we want to share together. And, you know, when I was growing up, it was kind of nerdy to play board games and have a beer. When I was in college, you know, we were nerds. and now, you know, everybody's doing it. So, you know, I think that there's a, like, it's just become part of the culture. And I think video games and board games use a lot of the same mechanics as well. Like, you know, concepts, like, you know, random generators, like in video games, right. You have randomness. In board games is dice. You'll have, you know, a hex-based map where you can move along. Well, that exists a lot in board games, and it also exists in video games. And yes. So they bleed into each other in a lot of ways. And that's super interesting as well. Like, there's a game called Blockus, which is Tetris-based blocks where you have to try to block the other person, but it's like literally looks like Tetris.
Oh.
you know, so it's pretty interesting just how I think those two mediums bleed into each other. So as yeah, you can how see they board can... games, I'm interested.
That's cool. And it's interesting how they can coexist where you have, you know, similar mediums like radio dying off,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, like they're not able to coexist almost. Yeah, it's yeah. interesting crossover.
I have to say, though, if I was to like break the question, my favorite is couch co-op video games. So that's not online games. It's you sit in the same room with somebody on the same TV and play a video game together.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's like the best. fantastic game, Towerfall. I don't know if you've ever heard that one, but no. Four-player... it's a 2D platformer with bows and arrows, and you're trying to kill each other in an arena. But it's like it's like Mario with bows and arrows. Trying to kill each other. Yeah,
Joe's thinking he could get into that.
No, well, yeah. It's funny because I'm not into either board games or video games, but Sean, it's just what you said that would kind of make me tip over, I guess, to video games because Mario Kart.
Yeah,
was probably exactly. One of my favorite to play with my son.
Yeah.
And then starting to think about it, I guess like Tecmo Bowl and Contra on the Nintendo 64.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Because I played video games, but I love games and I love playing games, but video games and board games were never the games mm-hmm. That I would want to play. I think
so what were you playing? Like beer pong?
something sports related. So like I when see. I think yeah, like yeah. when you like everyone's plays games, like I it kind of clicked on like that's what sport like sports, yeah, are,
sports
games,
are games,
right?
They're, basically, they're just games, physical
you're,
games.
You're learning Absolutely. Rules, you're learning, and I yep. think what's even better about taking games or whatever it is further, like there's more than just winning or losing, and like how do you lose, how do you win? Mm-hmm. So Ron, when you threw this topic out there, I was like, damn, I like this or that, like none yeah. of them were gravitating towards me. But I guess I would if I had to choose, and it stinks because originally going in, I wasn't going to say video games because I don't like all the kids. That's all they do is play video games. That's all they want to do. And I feel like there's so much more to video. There's so much more to life than video games. But I guess I would rather play a video game, an old, like you said, on the couch, whether it's Contra or Tecmo Bowl or something like that.
There's some fascinating new ones. It Takes Two. If ever you have the chance to play that, I play that with my son. You can't beat the game unless you collaborate together.
That's awesome.
So interesting.
Well, the problem now with playing with them, I feel like these fast-paced games, I don't know if it's because I'm old, or just my vision is going bad, but I can't keep up and everything's so fast.
You could play this game.
Is it split screen? I have problems with
it
split
is. See? Yeah, but wait, wait. It's vertical split screen. It's made for a wide screen.
Oh, TVs. Okay. So maybe that might be better.
Yeah. No, the old school, like, split screen horizontal. If you play that on the TV today, they're all widescreen. So it's like all you got is like.
And I don't know what I'm like. Where am I? What am I doing? Where? Yeah, like, I get so lost because there's, I feel like so much information coming at me. And I just can't process it all that quick. And here
and then
he
you
is.
Go and yell at your window, get off my lawn.
No, you know what I do? I go, I quit. This game's stupid.
Well, in this one, it takes two. If you quit, nobody can play. You have to be two. Oh, man. Recommend it, John, with your son.
He's at work right now. He's at Starbucks working. He's
I'm
a champ.
Sure he would rather play. It takes two.
Yeah. They just in Philly, they recently opened up a few game cafes. So it's like board game cafes that have, you know, food and drinks and.
And just, people who know all the rules, right?
Yeah, they have
that's the huge value.
Yeah, they were calling them, what is it, a wine sommelier, right? Yeah. Like he knows all the wines. They have like game sommelier.
Gamelier.
Yeah, like whatever. And they come and they talk to you at your table about what kind of games you like, what you don't like, and then they recommend a few games for you to test out. Yeah.
Yeah,
pretty cool. I mean, fun. Cool idea.
Well, I'm seeing a huge resurgence of like D&D as well.
Yeah,
like, role playing games that don't even have a board. That's really making a comeback. That's partly because of Stranger Things.
I tell you.
Oh, right. Yep.
That has too much work for me.
Oh yeah.
There's too much work involved in that game, and
too much work. I'm starting to see get a picture here.
I will say this, though. I do use some Dungeon and Dragon dice in the classroom.
Oh, there you go.
What
do you use them for?
Math games.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Like some kind of game. You know, like I like to bring games into the classroom. We did just bring a basketball hoop in the classroom last week.
We're going to pause for a second to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment. Would you like to hear your educational book, platform, or program advertised in this spot? With the Teacher Nerd sponsorship program, that could happen. You can be featured on the show and help us continue to bring great content to the podcast. We offer three levels of sponsorship, including commercials voiced and produced by one of the Teacher Nerds, as well as links listed on our sponsor's webpage. Visit teachernerds.com/sponsorship to check out some sample commercials and more information. And remember, that's nerds with a Z. And now back to the show.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess we can jump in talking about, you know, the learning styles and since the last podcast, I've been kind of fascinated with the topic and been doing a lot of reading and just bought a new book. There's a book out by Mark McCrindle and Ashley Fell called Generation Alpha. It just came in the mail like 2 or 3 days ago, so I haven't gotten to read it yet, but. Looking at the learning styles from other generations, you know, starting with like baby boomers, you know, I kind of did a little research in baby boomers. The learning was you're sitting in rows, you're quiet, it's formal, it's very structured. That was the learning style then. With my generation, I'm Generation X, was there was sometimes a little bit more group work. Things were sometimes a little bit more relaxed and interactive in the learning. You kind of did some interaction with the learning. And I think the beginnings of technology started to come in with that. So, you know, you had, I remember having like reading where you would also be listening to the reading as you were reading along. So there was some of that interaction. And then millennials, they talked about it being very multimodality and multisensory learning, and then, you know, moving on to Generation Z, you know, when they talked about kinesthetic, bringing in interactive furniture and flexible spaces, and it being more learner-centered, you know, learning styles or what it looked like. What generation are you? Millennial or?
I'm an old X. Millennial.
You're okay.
The oldest you can possibly be a millennial. I am 39, and right. So I was not 18 in 2000. That's the cutoff.
Okay.
Apparently. So, but I am. I mean, when I read all this stuff about millennials, I'm like, okay, that's me. Yep.
Yeah.
And Joe, I used to hate that stuff. I'm like, oh, generate, like, you can't put me in this box. And, right. You
know, but it actually, you start to look at it and you're like,
hey, it kind of does work. You know, yeah.
There's something to this, right?
Yeah.
And I know you had talked on the last show about, you know, a lot about Generation Z. And I wanted to get into like just some kind of like general, you know, information about Generation Z. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you want to throw anything out or you want me to start.
Sure. I mean, so Gen Z is the group after millennials. They're the people who are like 10 to 25 right now. And so they're both, you know, the kids that are in our middle schools and high schools and the young workers coming into the workplace. So they are an interesting group for a lot of reasons. And of course, you know, we're going to say a lot of things in this conversation. And I just want to, you know, caveat 100% here. These are just huge generalizations.
Right.
And
observations, right? From what we see in our daily lives.
Yes. And sociological, statistical groups that have some shared experiences. And we can talk about those in a sec. Sure. That define, you know, part of the worldview they have. But they're by no means like all of them the same or have all these characteristics. And you could be right. In that age group and just totally not be like that. Right. And so it's okay. But the purpose of talking about it, you know, in my opinion, from an educator standpoint, is to at least have some sort of understanding that the kids that are in front of you are probably have a lot of characteristics that are different from when you were in school and from you now. And it's, you know, well, it's going to be super easy. And as we have this conversation, we'll talk about technology. Obviously, you know, access to technology and the way that that's evolved over, you know, millennials' childhoods versus Gen Xers' childhoods versus Gen Zs and alphas. Like it's happening very fast. It used to be that, you know, large transformational shifts would happen over two generations. Now they're happening mid-generation. You know, you look at kids that are 10, you know, in Gen Alpha, for example, they'll have seen before the age of 12, you know, they'll have seen the rise of AI, you know, while at the same time, you know, learning to read on iPads, you know, so like just the shift that's happening as they're growing up is completely different than, you know, the type of technological change we'll have seen. So it's easy to just kind of explain it all away with that. But there's actually a lot more to it than that. So Gen Z's, you know, some important things to know about them for educators. So one is they are a lot more prone to being anxious and lonely and depressed than previous generations. Some studies say 60% more likely to experience depression, anxiety, chronic loneliness than millennials. You know, I think for me, when I think about Gen Z's, like, I think this is a super important thing we should be thinking about. It's easy to think, you know, Gen Z's are super sensitive or whatever, you know, the right. Some people who don't like Gen Z's will call them snowflakes and all of that, yeah, exactly. You know, but they are growing up and have grown up in a context where it was a lot more anxiety inducing than when we were growing up. So these kids, when they were kids, so, you know, if you're in your 20s today, that means when you were like 6 or 7 or 8, that was the 2008 recession. So one of the biggest recessions in recent history, maybe their parents lost their jobs. So economic uncertainty was at the core of their childhood. This is also a generation that is living with huge climate anxiety. So you know, when they think about the future, they're thinking, hey, you could lose your job anytime. They're thinking, hey, there might not even be a world to live in when I'm an old person.
Right.
They are also thinking, you know, from an anxiety perspective, like these are people who are experiencing social media in a very visceral way. So comparing themselves, being exposed to comparatives in a much more important fashion than when we were growing up.
I think Wall Street Journal did a expose on Instagram, and it was 1 in 3 girls saying their body image is worsened by looking at Instagram.
That's right. Well, because what do you see on Instagram? You
don't
see, you know, ugly people. I mean, you could, but...
And it's everybody at their best.
The algorithm is made to show you, like, hot people that make you want to buy stuff. You know, so that's what you think becomes normal.
Yeah, and you compare yourself to constantly.
That's right. So lots of context for more anxiety. And so when we're teaching these kids, we need to believe that viscerally, that they are A, going to be more anxious, and B, that it's okay for them to be more anxious. You know, I think the okay part is a challenge for us, because you're like, why are you anxious about that? Who cares? Right.
Right. Like, well, and like, yeah, like, I mean, or you know, when I was a kid, it was like, stop, you know, what are you so upset about? Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, my dad was famous for, I'll give you something to cry about.
Like, yeah. You can't say that anymore.
No, definitely not. But I mean, yeah. Having to be even okay with having emotion.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's okay to have feelings. It's okay to have feelings, but because we have when there's kids that cry, my first response is, why are you crying? Like, and then my response is, don't let it get you that upset that you just want to break down and cry. Because sometimes it's over grades, sometimes it's over like the wildest things. And I sat and had a great conversation with a little girl today about one of her little friends, and she's doing this, and we're having an argument. And I just feel like it's okay. It's okay. And we don't have to be friends. And I'm like, that's the greatest thing I think you could realize. Like, she's a nice girl. You're a nice girl. If things aren't working together, that's okay. You can go your way and she can go her way. And I said, you know, we could have a restorative circle. We could call the guidance counselor. And she goes, no, I just, as long as it's okay. I'm like, why is it not okay? Like, what? I don't know. It's interesting now that it's an issue, I feel.
Well, these are kids that grew up in a world where by default, you're connected to other people.
Right.
Like, when you think about growing up with social media, like, unfriending somebody is a deal. It's a thing.
I guess.
Right. Right. And it's like, so.
I did. Yeah. It's like
losing followers. And
yeah, that's right. The normal state is to be connected to people.
Right.
And so choosing disconnection is, you know, an abnormal
but I thought
experience,
that
maybe. Yeah, no, super interesting.
Responsible, right? Like, I'm not going to put myself in a situation where we're just going to argue all the time. And that's what she says. She goes, it just leads to an argument. Yeah, but we spent 10 minutes of her lunch just talking it out. And I'm like,
having you being open to have that chat. Right. Like that.
We were able to go out and we were outside for 10 minutes. It was beautiful out today. It was 62 degrees. So we're out for 10 minutes. She's like, I'm bored. I'm like, how can you be bored? You're outside. It's beautiful out. It's February. And then I said, do you want to talk about anything? And next thing you know, it all came out. And I'm like, you should talk to a counselor. and then I said, you know what? We got to line up. Let's get everyone in. And if you want to talk, I said, we can hang out and talk. And you know, they were going to lunch, so we had that time. And it was, I don't want to say fascinating, but it shook me. I'm like, man, I let it go, right? Like that song goes, let it go. But I guess if unfriending someone on social media, or if, God forbid, if you got unfriended, right? Like that would, that could possibly crush someone, where, you know, they said if you could be any... Like the kids growing up today, if they could learn to be that little bit of a savage, you know, in the right moments, then they're going to do great. Because it seems like, well, you said it was a, you know, they call them snowflakes, but they're just so anxious and worried about things. If you can get rid of that worry, right? Or mm-hmm. obviously not get rid of it, but what's
or tame even just it. Accept
tame
it.
The, tame okay. the feelings or yeah. work through the feelings. Work through the feelings of anxiety.
Well, from an SEL perspective, I would say teach them skills so that they can right. cope with it, right?
Well, yep. I mean, we have our Feel Good Fridays, and it's I mean, the name's a little bit hokey, but what the exercises they're going through are legitimate. And it's lessons on just being respectful and what it looks like to be respectful, responsible.
Managing your own stress, self-management.
Emotions.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. and we that when they come in, they're like, are we doing Feel Good Fridays? I'm like, what do you think? They're like, oh. And so we make the deal. I'm like, listen, it's a 40-minute period. Give me 20 minutes. Let's just do this for 20 minutes to see what they want to talk about. Let's play the games. Because I feel like it's valid because it's not like they're getting a health class where they're able to learn about this stuff. Social emotional learning, I feel like, is a big part of our district. And now they finally have, I feel like, something that they're able to work through. I just feel like it might have been better off if you started in kindergarten the first year, second year, kindergartners and first graders, third year, kindergartners, first graders, and second graders. So by the time it gets to the fourth grade teachers, those kids have had it for 5 years and everyone else behind them is getting it. So it's not like it's thrown into a sixth grader or a seventh grader, which might have a little more attitude and fight against it, as opposed to everyone taking it.
I guess
it
you got
to
start it at some point, right? Like, so your first graders and all now will coming up, you'll have it'll
well,
be
right.
Yeah.
I mean, those fifth graders need help now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether they, and is it going to
be the, like, as good as what, you know, 5 years of that it'll have been? Probably right. not, but better than nothing. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
And they're going to take something away from it, even if they think it's hokey or whatever. Mm-hmm. They've heard it. It's at least into their brain. Right. I mean, you know,
and yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting, though, because when you think about, you know, the trends for these kids, you know, when you're looking at growing up in a world of uncertainty and how that leads to anxiety and, you know, those types of feelings, A, we need to teach them how to cope with that. But it also leads to other things, like their grades are more important to them than previous generations because they're worried about job security. And employability. And they're worried about job security because recession, also because jobs are disappearing and appearing overnight right. as they're growing up. You know, when you think about being a gig worker, like being an Uber driver seems like a pretty, you know, not special thing today, right? But if you think about it, Uber was like founded... I'm Googling the date here just to get the exact date. So like Uber became mainstream like in 2015, 2016, let's say.
Right.
So 7 years ago,
right.
that job didn't exist.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't possible to
right.
pick up your phone and do whatever job you wanted.
Well, and think about DoorDash is even.
Right. Right.
Or Uber Eats is even.
And so,
you know,
so there's
less
jobs
time
being
that.
Created yeah. overnight, and there's jobs disappearing as well overnight.
Right.
You know, and these kids are seeing that. Like if you look at what's happening right now with AI and ChatGPT, and like these are massive workplace disruptions that have been, you know, predicted for years, but that are coming to bear as, you know, every day as we're talking.
Right.
You know, the like jobs like being, you know, digital artist, like AI is probably going to do that. And not in 20 years, like next year.
Right.
You know, and you look at like ChatGPT, like somebody who's a blogger, for example, like
right,
ChatGPT could just do that. So all of a sudden they're hyper aware that they're living in a context that where you need to be, you know, in some ways, always self-employed. And when you see them coming into the workplace, they have really high expectations about, you know, how their workplace is going to treat them and about wanting to move up the ladder very quickly. Like we've seen, you know, I employ people and we see them, and these younger employees that we've had or have, or, you know, they want to progress every year and move up and get promotions. And, you know, that's a completely different mindset than millennials, who were like searching for meaning
right
in their work. You know, like, I want work that's going to fulfill me and, you know, match to my values. When you look at Gen Z's, that's not as important to them as it was to millennials. And so, and what does that mean when we think about education? You know, in some ways, that's why they're upset about grades. They're, A, because of anxiousness, but also because, hey, I want to be successful. And so there's a very different trend happening there in terms of how they're perceiving the world and their report of culture. This is the first generation as well that has had hyper-personalized access right. to culture. You know, it seems like a small thing, but, you know, you look at alphas and Gen Zs, these are kids who didn't grow up with cable TV and who, when they go on TV to get content, either on YouTube or on Netflix, it's all curated for them.
Oh, well, I didn't understand where you're going, but
it's curated. Like, we watch TV and it was like, shut up, you're just gonna watch what's on there. and if you're lucky, you can pick the channel, you know. Right. Like, that's the first, like, when I was a really small kid, we had, you know, that brown box with a wire, and it wasn't even a remote control. It was like,
right.
Like, that was choice. Now you don't even need to choose. The machine gives you stuff
right.
to choose for you based off of your preferences. So all the experiences you're getting are tailored to you. And it's true for music. It's true for, you know, games. It's true for, you know, movies and film and TV. Yeah. And so what do they expect out of school and the workplace? They expect experiences that are tailored to them.
And you
expect hyper-personalized experiences.
And it's tailored to them, and they get to make choices about the thing that's tailored to them, right? Like, so it's like a combination of two things, you know, that I want hyper-personalized, but I want multiple choices of personalized, which is, it's a lot for an educator to think about. Like, how do you reach 25 individuals with that? You
have choices.
What's that?
And give them multiple choices each.
Right. Well, that's where,
which is what they're expecting, right? Like, but it's, I mean, is that going to be tasked on the teachers, right? Like,
well, you need to change your,
It's tasked by the students. I mean, that's what they expect.
Right. I mean, they're basically your customer, right? You know what I mean? If you look at it from a business perspective, them and the parents are your customer. You're the business. And you either change or you die.
Teaching is so similar to marketing, guys.
Yeah, I mean,
you're basically selling content and an experience. Like, hey, right. this can be awesome. Hey, you want to be here, you know.
But again, that's where I think teachers and doing things that are project-based, right? Because when you do project-based learning, there's a lot of choice involved in decisions you make about how you come along with that project. You get them excited. I mean, I'm doing a project now with seventh grade, an engineering project, and it's everybody's doing the same project, but it's coming along very differently, right? They have to design a scaled prototype of an off-road wheelchair for a fictitious person, but who was injured in a mountain biking accident and still wants to get outdoors and off-road. The engagement in class is better than I've seen in a long time, because there is choice. They're getting to be creative. And I just gave them a few guidelines and basically said, design something, design it, test it. Let's, you know, so again, like you said, Sean, it's an experience, right? The whole process is an experience for them. It's almost like a game where you're making choices and see what happens.
Well, it is like a game, because projects are, project-based learning, one of the big strengths is that it fulfills, you know, the fundamental needs for intrinsic motivation, right? So controllability. You get to make lots of decisions.
Yep.
Like, what type of chair am I going to make? What wheels? Like, what are we going to do? Competency. You get to measure yourself very quickly and multiple times throughout the project as you're testing. And at the end, you know if you succeed or not because it works or it doesn't work. And, you know, so you're very able to measure your own competency, which is super empowering. And usually these are group things. So there's a whole relatedness aspect. Yep. And you get to compare to all the other projects. And, you know, so those three fundamental needs are the same drivers that video game makers know. I mean, it's self-determination theory, right? And video game makers know that those same fundamental needs are what are going to drive engagement in a video game or in a board game, right? So what's so special about video games? You get to control the experience. You're in the driver's seat. They're really, really good at telling you how good you are. How good are you at Mario? Well, you're as good as the level you got to, and that's pretty easy. Right. That's and they give you feedback all the time, and they give you chances. So there's a very clear set of parameters that tell you how good you are and allow you to improve yourself. And of course, you know, video games are really good at connecting human beings together, especially online games. So it's not almost like a game. It is literally the right. Same thing. The same parameters psychologically are happening in project-based learning than in playing a game.
Right.
And so yeah, like I very much agree with that.
And I think, but that's what I'm saying. Like that's as you learn this and you take this stuff in about these generations, teachers, if you've been in teaching for 25 years, you have to put a mindset shift in, or you're going to feel like you're running up against a brick wall constantly. You know, if it's here are a bunch of worksheets that you're going to do, and yes, I've now made them digital, so they're online, but they're still worksheets, right? So well, that there's no choice involved.
No,
there's
no controllability,
right?
Competence. Good. I mean, maybe the people who are motivated by worksheets, because there are some kids who like them.
Sure.
They're the ones who are really motivated by competency, right? Like, I completed the whole worksheet before everybody. like, we know who those kids are.
Yep, yep.
So there are some kids that get motivated by that. But it's not a social experience. So like that, we're literally not with worksheets, no matter what medium they're on, fulfilling those needs. So no wonder it's disengaging, right?
Right. Yeah, it's you know what I was thinking too, as you were talking about like the anxiety, and one thing that I like clicked into my head was, if you're talking about from like 2000 on, you're talking about kids who, first of all, that was the rise of 24/7 news cycle, right? So even if they're not sitting down watching it, it's on somewhere in the background in their house, right? Where they hear it without even knowing that they're engaging
in a way that we weren't necessarily.
Right. And then think about mass shootings. Like it is constant, and it's schools and it's churches and it's supermarkets. So it's, these kids are growing up with it in your elementary school, in a high school, in a college, just the other day at Michigan. So I can't imagine the level of anxiety that brings. And with the younger Gen Z, and the Generation Alpha, you may not even know why you're anxious, because you can't even process, you know, what the anxiousness is about.
Yeah. Totally true. And important to consider when we're working with these kids, you know. I think another thing that's interesting and surprising is that as teenagers and young adults, Gen Zers are doing a lot less of the stuff you would expect them to be doing, like partying and getting out and drinking. Like, forget the exact statistic, but it's like three times less parties happening with Gen Z college students than with, you know, millennial college students. So there's a whole different approach to like what socializing means as well.
Right. I was going to say, I wonder if it's you're socializing on your phone, not in person sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. There's absolutely a reality and a belief that, you know, the the social interactions are just as meaningful on the phone.
Right.
Which is not, you know, we were talking about, Joe, about online games at the very outset of this. And you're saying, I don't like them. And, you know, so I'm a gamer, as you can tell from the beginning of this conversation. And I've, you know, developed, played games with my son. My son's 9. And, you know, my rule playing games with him was up until like he was the very recently, we'll play video games, but we got to play together. And, and so made it, you know, a social and a learning experience. And that's why I know all these great Gacha co-op games. But what's fascinating to me is that a lot of the kids that are his age have been a lot more exposed to social media than he has. And you know, for better, for worse, he's like obsessed with Pokemon and with Zelda. And we did all this Pokemon stuff. So he loves video games. I'm like, oh man, maybe I've created a monster here. But then when you think about what video games do to your mind versus what social media does to your mind, it is super interesting. So, you know, a lot of what we associate with screen time and the negative results relating to that are actually tied to time spent on social media.
Yeah.
And we look at studies between kids who spend, you know, 15 hours a week on social media and 15 hours a week playing video games. All the things relating to anxiety, depression, et cetera, they're on the social media side. And you're actually seeing a lot less of that on the video game side of things. And when you think about it, video games are designed to get you engaged, focused, in the flow, completely at one with the experience that you're in. Whereas social media is designed to get you to keep changing all the time and have, you know, and when we look at studies on Gen Zs that show that they have shorter attention spans, it's related to social media consumption a lot more than video game consumption. And I think that that's a super interesting nuance because we tend to put it all in the same bucket. Like, oh, all they want to do is play video games. I'm like, well, I'd rather video games than TikTok, just so we're clear.
And
I think that that's a fascinating thing to think about when we have, you know, cultural judgments as adults about what they're spending their time doing.
Yeah, because you could be sitting on a video. You want to talk about attention span. There are some kids who will be 3 hours on a full attention to a video game. But like that TikTok thing, it's the next you're scrolling through.
They are literally 30 seconds each.
Right. Like
that's the amount of time that they're trying to keep engaged again and again and again.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're expecting if your brain's building that's
right.
The dopamine, you know, if you think about it as a muscle. Different.
Yeah.
Right. That's what you're building to is like a 30 second attention span.
Mm hmm.
Which, yeah, I mean, that's...
So you're like smiling.
Yeah, because I know I'm retiring in 8 years. The struggle's only for 8 more years.
Well, but I think, you know, and what I started to find fascinating as we were going through this is just thinking about like, okay, this is the reality, right? So again, if you almost look at it as a game from my perspective, what do I need to do to work with these kids in the reality that they're living in? You know, I mean, I was just looking at one of the things, like they were talking about Generation Alpha, like generalities, like the communications, how they prefer to communicate. Like every generation has that preferred style, right?
This little girl said to this teacher the other day at a soup kitchen where she was giving them instruction. The little girl had never met the teacher before. She was bet and then turned around and walked away. The teacher was like, What was that? What is like? And she goes, this girl doesn't know me from anyone. I'm the adult. And she talked to me like I was her friend. Like she goes, I don't even know what bet means. I said, I think she means cool. She'll do whatever you want.
You got it.
You bet. But like, that's, I feel like that's, you said, what just, their own way of doing it.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're different, you know, like, I think you have generations that like they were saying with Generation Alpha, like images and voice and video are their preferred communication style, right? Like memes, they can tell you a whole lot in a meme.
Well, I think memes are out for Gen Alphas, but
is it out for Alpha? Okay.
Apparently, animated GIFs are like
okay. So,
millennials are so old school with their animated GIFs.
Yeah,
I love animated GIFs. So there you go.
Oh, so do I. Yeah.
Yeah. But well, and it's interesting when you think about learning styles as well. So, Joe, what you were just saying about, you know, they do it their own way. My son, this is an example, but it's generalized with alphas. This is a generation that will have grown up with direct access to quality learning in a way unprecedented before. And I don't mean at school. I mean like on YouTube. My son has watched at least 500 hours of drawing tutorials.
Yeah.
And is really, really loves drawing. And, you know, he'll like, no more screen time. He's like, well, can I watch a how to draw tutorial? And he's gotten really, really good as an artist. And, you know, in a way that never would have been possible. And what he's learning from that, other than, you know, get good at drawing, is if I want to learn something that I'm interested in, I can, and I know how.
Right.
And that is a super powerful thing to have instilled from a young age. When you think about growth mindset, like this is literally like, you don't need to ask an adult to teach you things. You can go out and figure out how to do it on your own. And now he's good enough that he knows how to, you know, search on YouTube. He knows how to read and write now. So used to be, we had to search for him, and now he's just learning stuff on his own spontaneously. And anybody who's a parent listening with kids that age will say, oh yeah, I've seen my kid do that. Like going down rabbit holes, learning about stuff on YouTube. And when you think about their expectation then of school and their own capacity for learning in school and what they believe teachers should be doing for them in school, that's pretty interesting. Right. And because this whole idea that the only place I'm going to learn stuff is from books or from teachers is really out the window right from age four, you know. So I think that's a pretty compelling thing to be thinking about.
Yeah. And as a teacher, taking that idea of being just that guide for them a little bit more in the classroom than, you know, what do they say, the sage on the stage kind of mentality, right? Like you're there to help guide them in their learning. And, you know, giving, if video is a preferred style of learning, bringing video into your classroom and, you know, giving choice in the video and, you know, for what you want to
find the right video
or or even
right
or, yeah, things like that, like
and convince you that it's the right video because they'll be able to do that,
or even like have a shared Wakelet and allow them to, okay, you found this video, great, go post it in Wakelet, so you then the students are even the curators of content for the class.
That's right.
I mean,
as they expect to be.
Right. Right.
Like they expect a content to be curated. Period. And right. They expect to be able to do their own curation as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's it. Like something like a Wakelet where they can, you know, it can be saved and posted. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, and I saw things like, you know, and Joe and I, we've talked about this, like it's not about knowing everything now, right? Like, because everybody knows anything they want to know in a matter of a minute or 30 seconds.
However long it takes you to Google it.
Right. You know, but then it's the choice of how are you going to show me what you know? And how are you going to, you know, give me, if I'm assessing you in some way, how are you going to show? Are you going to make me a video, which everybody wants to be a YouTube or TikTok star, right? So like give them the opportunities to show it to you on video. you know, give them the opportunity to create content, right? I mean, they're easy. I don't say easy, but there are changes that you can make to your classroom that are going to engage your students of this generation or the, you know, these two generations.
And if you don't make the changes, then at least be aware of why it won't work.
Right, right. Or why you're going to be banging your head against the wall.
But yeah, but it's like, you know, and maybe you don't make all the changes and maybe all the, you know, but
make them
being able to empathize.
Yeah.
By understanding, you know, how these kids think and are built is a huge and important skill for educators, because it's really hard to teach to kids if you don't, you know, get them.
Well, and I think every generation has, you know, the thing like, oh, those kids, right? Like whether it was in the 60s and the kids in their rock and roll music or, you know, whatever it is.
Every generation thinks the next generation is lazy.
Right, right. Like, I mean, it's, but I think a point you made, Sean, is like how quickly those changes are happening and the gap, you know, even between the school looked the same 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, kids somewhat looked the same all through that. You went outside and you played. The intervention of the radio came in and kids came in and listened to the radio for a little bit. And then TV came and maybe they came in and they stayed in a little bit longer watching the TV. But in general, those generations up through the 80s and maybe even in the 90s looked the same. You came home from school, you went outside and played, right? The change is so different now that you can't do all those old things. You know, the methodologies of teaching necessarily or the things that you did all those years. There has to be a shift. It's not going to continue to work.
What's interesting too is like bringing kids outside then becomes a valuable experience you can give them at school. No, but like when you think about school, we should be thinking about providing them experiences that they can't have themselves at home.
Yeah.
Right. And from a learning perspective, if a kid can learn stuff on YouTube at home, I shouldn't necessarily be doing that at school because they're already doing that. What can I do more to elevate that? Maybe I need to be teaching them about YouTube, or maybe I need to be bringing them outside. And those aren't necessarily, you know, suggestions, but the point is we should be thinking about what is the plus value that a kid has to be coming to school versus learning at home on their own all this stuff because they could.
Right.
And so, you know, I had a long conversation. My son started watching shorts on YouTube because they copied TikTok and then they,
you
know, and I'm like, oh. Damn. And I'm like, those are ads. Like one in five of those are ads. You know that, right? He's like, what are you talking about? And we had a lifelong conversation where I, you know, showed him how to spot the ads and, you know, like, why do you think they're showing you this ad? You know? And so there's things we can do to teach kids as well how to learn better through these platforms. And I think that's a pretty interesting thing to be thinking about also.
Yeah. Even that, just doing a lesson on spotting the ad and, you know, talking about why and all that. I mean, that's a huge lesson. And again, it's going to bring some engagement because it involves YouTube or TikTok or Instagram or
stuff, right? They care about. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so it's meeting them where they are. And then, you know, just thinking teaching wise, you want to bring in your persuasive writing? Mm-hmm. There's how you bring in your unit on persuasive writing, right? Like somebody had to create a script or bullet points or something to get this video made that's trying to persuade you to buy something. Now you go ahead, create something and see if you can create some kind of short. You got 30 seconds. Here's your iPad, your Chromebook, video editing, you know, go to it. And they pick up video editing like that, you know, so
the tools are a lot easier than they were when we,
yeah, it's true. And with AI, they're going to be an even better, even easier.
You just say, make a video about this. And it's
well,
like
well I think now, like, you can go into even Canva and you can tell them, you can type in a picture that you would want to see.
Yeah.
And it kind of AI creates it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's DALL-E and Midjourney. These are,
yeah.
This is what was going on in the fall before ChatGPT exploded for text. Oh.
Yeah. It's wild.
And there's companies doing that with video too.
Really?
What is ChatGPT keeps referencing? I don't know what it is.
Oh man, Joe,
I know.
Living under the rock. Okay. No problem.
What is this? Is this Elon? Is this Elon Musk related? Is that what this is?
Believe it or not, it is. It is.
It all ties back to him.
It's like the what was that? The 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Kevin. So who is Chad? Okay. Is that what you're saying?
It's a chat box, and GPT is just like it's the AI acronym. So it's called ChatGPT, and it's a chat box, and you can ask it stuff. And it's been trained. It's an AI that's been trained up on everything that was on the internet prior to 2022. And you can ask it things like, write me a poem about Joe, a podcast host, and it will.
Really?
Yeah. Can we do screen share here? I'll show you. Literally. I don't know if we're only audio here, but.
Well, we pull some video.
All right. Okay. Here,
you should be able to share.
Close my other tabs in case something. I got something up there. I don't know. Okay. So this is ChatGPT. Okay. So this is a bot that can generate text and is contextual. So I could say, write a poem about Joe, a fifth grade teacher and podcast host. Make it short and funny.
Just like that.
Yeah. So people who are on audio, Joe's a teacher and podcast host, a master of both realms, almost. He'll teach you math and science too, then chat about his favorite brew. His student thinks he's quite the guy, but on his show, he's quite the spy. He spills the tea on all the news and shares his thoughts on kangaroo shoes. So if you're looking for a laugh or need some help with math, just tune in to Joe's podcast show and let the learning flow and flow.
Holy smokes.
Okay. Now, write a three-paragraph argumentative text.
Oh my god, no way.
About the pros and cons of, give me a subject here,
capitalism.
Great. A really good fifth grade topic here.
Holy smokes.
This can write papers. Yeah, this will write papers really.
So good. is this like, and then can they, holy smokes, so this would be an original paper. Like,
yeah, that's right. It's not played. It's not copying. It's generating text.
This is what now, I mean. Teachers are freaking out.
Yeah, people are freaking out. You need to completely rethink.
Holy crap!
But now, so it's writing all this text out. But
with and it's got transitions. It's
really good. Yeah. On the con side,
grammar. It's
created for and then. But what's really cool, because this type of technology has existed for like a year or two, what's really cool about this one is it remembers. So you could say instead, make it only three sentences. And it remembers what you asked it. It remembers what it wrote. And then you can like tweak it.
Oh, so is this like, this now, is specific to you though, Sean? Like this is like your, is this a site
this
you're
on? My account. Yeah.
Okay.
But like,
but you can, you can go get an account.
Right. That's so like anyone can know this is a free program.
Yep. It's completely free. They now have a paid version so you can get access faster, but they,
that seems pretty fast.
They launched it in December and it got to 100 million users in 2 weeks or something. Jeez. Crazy. It took Facebook like 3 years to get to that or something. Like it's ridiculous.
Yep.
But check this out, guys. You could say like, write a text about Lenny's personality in Mice and Men.
Yep.
Use original quotes from the book.
No.
From the book to support.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. And Lenny, one of the main characters in John Steinbeck's Mice and Men, is portrayed as a man with unique person, despite his size, blah, 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 as a childhood, you know, blah, blah, blah. For instance, George's friend describes him as, quote, a poor bastard and a crazy bastard, Steinbeck, page 4, but also acknowledges his loyalty and good intentions. He ain't mean. I can't, blah, 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 like.
So that that Steinbeck page 4, that's the, what do they call it? Oh, my God.
This is the world alphas are growing up in.
Right.
So like you said, a journalist, right? A sports journalist will be no more.
Why? Like, give me a, like, now it's only trained till 2000, but like, hey, right?
Oh,
a recap of the 2020 Super Bowl. Like, it, you know, it doesn't have information from 2023, but, you know.
Yeah.
You can.
But who knows next month whether or not this could be.
That's right.
Right? It's like, linked to.
So fast. That's right. And so.
This Super
Bowl. It's a brave new world we're living in. Sorry.
The Super Bowl essay is a little sore spot right now, Sean.
Okay. City Chiefs.
We're close to Philly here.
I don't know. I just picked a random one. I don't know.
This is talking about the Chiefs Super Bowl. Yeah.
Stupid Mahomes.
Yeah. Not talking about Mahomes.
That's amazing. I don't know where I've been. I must have been under a rock because, like,
it's been blowing up. But I mean, you could have it write poetry, you can have it write a text, you can have it write whatever want.
Then, as an educator, you need to get creative in how you are assessing because,
how
necessarily assessing an understanding? Somebody could never have read the book. And write you an essay.
They could not even know what the book is.
Right.
Oh my God.
See if it knows about your podcast.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, there you go. Teacher Nerds Podcast is a must. Write a blurb about Teacher Nerds Podcast. There you go. Whether you're a seasoned teacher just starting out, you'll find valuable tips and tricks, strategies to help you improve your teaching practice and make a positive impact on your students.
This is hilarious.
Is it hilarious? Is it frightening? Is it?
Yeah, but because like, so now, Ron, when we want to do something for the website, instead of sitting here, I mean, that would take
hours.
I was going to say at least to try and come up with something that precise and sounding so intelligent. And then
it could be hours or maybe never between the two.
And I hear it roll like a 3-page thing. I'm like, punchy
and markety.
Here's, you know. Looking up your teacher game, check out the Teacher Nerds Podcast.
This is amazing. Yep. But,
you know,
so it's maybe wild. Not even think about how to grade. How about how do you use this?
Right. Well, that's it.
Right.
And that's it. So, like, the debate right now in education about this is, oh my God, homework is destroyed. And we, like, kids are just going to cheat on everything. And on the other hand, there's like, well, it's a brave new world and we need to be teaching kids how to use these tools. I have team members of my team that have become huge power users of this on my marketing team, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
They're using it to write like marketing copy all the time and just save a ton of time.
Right.
And they've gotten really good at like making good prompts. And
right. So that's the skill you need to learn now is how do you generate good responses from.
Like you just took that whole multi-paragraph and said, make it short, punchy, and throwing in that markety. So like make it sound, which means a commercial, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, that's wild.
It's mind blowing. It really is.
So I haven't used it. The thumbs up and thumbs down, that kind of helps.
That's to train it. Yeah. You're like,
okay, that's a good
response. And that's right. Yeah. And so like all the users are making it smarter.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, I guess the more I think about it, the more scared I get. Because, like, this is the Matrix. It's something you said earlier. I'm like, damn, we are living in the Matrix. It's like, I guess I don't want the blue pill. I want the red pill. I want to go back to sleep. And I don't.
Yeah. And retire in 8 years. We heard it.
Holy
like,
well, but now,
but think for teachers. So we're talking about how to teach kids, but think about teachers. Try this. Make a lesson plan for a 60-minute period about colonial America in fifth grade. I don't know, making stuff up here. Here's a lesson plan for a 60-minute period on colonial America for fifth grade.
Oh, life look at that. Oh, my God. But even look at how it's setting it up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, think about how you can save time. As
lesson plans just got easier.
Joe's like, lesson plans, no problem. How many pages of them do you want?
Well, but...
And maybe you don't copy this, but it's such a good starting point.
Well, right. How about ideas, right?
Yeah, like, it's just generating ideas for you.
It's like having a really good co-teacher that can give you ideas.
Yeah.
Small group discussions. Divide students into small groups with a handful of discussion questions.
Oh, questions, and look, and it gives you
what are some challenges? What are some of the benefits of living in the colonies? How do the colonies differ from each other? Like, you got prompts and everything. And you got an assessment. Like
here's a
full lesson plan in...
Give that, Sean, a thumbs up. That was good.
All right.
That's good. That's good.
All right, well, here you go. Great one.
Ew. I like that.
Mind blown, right?
Yep. Just
complete mind blown.
And then think about, like, if you integrate now, give me the best video to add into so-and-so lesson, right? Like, if it starts to be able to...
Yeah, it's not able to do that.
Right, but I'm saying, like, that's coming, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Google had just announced that they were combining this type of AI into their search bar. So you'll be searching and AIing at the same time.
Yep.
Microsoft just launched it in Bing last week on an early access.
Wait, which means how would this make Google better?
Well, because you could ask Google stuff and it'll give you the search results. And then it'll give you the AI-generated result as well. So if you're like,
that's not the same thing.
No, one is crawling the internet to find you the right answers by looking at keywords and producing
the Google search. That would be the Google
search. That's the Google search.
Yeah,
this is generating completely new content. This is not content. It didn't go find this lesson plan.
So online. Do a Google.
It made it up, this lesson plan. This is a completely original and new lesson plan.
Right. If we Googled this lesson plan, we would have the search results of ones that have previously been made and used.
Right.
This is nobody's made that. Nobody has this lesson plan.
Okay. So that's our cheese.
Yeah. It's completely new. And that's why for kids, it's not like you can't like plagiarize.
Right.
It's not like find me a paper about mice and men and then they hand it in to you and then you can find the same paper online.
Right.
It's literally write a new paper.
Yep.
And you can, with ChatGPT, what you can even do is feed it your own writing and then tell it to write it in your own style.
Oh, get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Like, there's no way you, yeah. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This just, I mean, this just changed like high school English classes or middle school English classes.
Bing's already doing this.
Bing. Yeah. But like, look, write an arithmetic problem. Arithmetic problem for long division. Okay. So it'll write a math problem here. Make it a contextualized problem with a situation, not just the... Ashley is planning a road trip from New York to California, blah, blah, blah. She wants to... So, okay. And then...
She'll give you
the solution. So you could type in a math problem in here and say, solve this. And it'll tell you how to do it. So like kids could be using this to learn how to do stuff as well, like learn how to do math, learn how to, solve science problems, et cetera.
So right. So there's where the fear-based might come in, but you don't need to be afraid. Like, this is helping them learn.
It's not just giving them
the answer. It's showing them this is how we got to the answer too.
Mm-hmm. or explain quantum physics to a 7-year-old. Seriously.
Oh, wow.
And this is good. I'm a physicist. I'm telling you it's good.
Oh, that's right.
Wow. Now, so they would have
could ask it to explain it to them, you know.
But now they can do this, and so Bing right now would be a better search engine than Google.
Yes, except Bing's AI has been doing some really weird stuff this week. You can Google it. It's freaking creepy. It's like having arguments with people and like, it's weird. It's like,
so this would be the science fiction movie.
Yes. It's like Space Odyssey Hal.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
That's Hal. Exactly what's going on with Bing this week. It's super creepy.
Wow.
This is why Dwight on The Office said you never
have
a robot with more than like a 3-foot cord.
Oh, yeah.
You always unplug it.
That's wild.
Huh.
So but again,
think about the impact of this on these alphas as they get into school and how they learn and what they expect school to, like the value they're going to need for school to provide for it to be better than this.
Yeah.
And
well, that's what you said. It's like you, it has to be an experience.
That's right.
I mean, if there's no takeaway from this episode, like it's got to be an experience.
Yep.
What you're providing.
I know what I'm going to sign up for as soon as this podcast's over.
Right. There you go. It's wild. It's really wild.
Yeah.
It even works in other languages. Because I speak French, and so I tried it in French, and it works super well as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. I'm glad. You know what? I'm glad I asked. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked too.
Tangential, but yeah.
But I mean, that's
a good demo right there.
There's somebody who's going to be listening who didn't know or, you know, or wasn't.
They're going to be like, yeah, Joe, who's Chad? Like, I don't know who Chad is either, buddy. Chad.
Well, and somebody who's listening, like what's cool about this is that a lot of the stuff that's been done about ChatGPT is general media stuff or stuff about, you know, how kids can clone homework or whatever. But like, talking about, for example, how to get it to write you a lesson plan.
Yeah.
This is stuff probably teachers haven't thought about yet for a lot of them. And that's super useful and valuable information. Like these tools exist now and they can save you so much time as a teacher. Like
you just said, like you have a co-teacher. There's a co-teacher right there who has the time to, I mean, that developed in what? Less than a minute? With discussion questions,
yeah,
things to talk about. I mean, because what do you have to do as a teacher? Sit there with a textbook and go through things, and especially if it's your first time with the curriculum. And yeah.
I'd be super curious to take a student paper and ask it to grade it as well.
Oh,
that could be pretty right.
Upload the paper in and see.
Yeah, like can you paste it in and see? I don't have any. I was trying to like find an example while you were talking of like an actual student, like a real student paper.
A student paper with grades and comments.
That would be.
I haven't tried this one. I'm just thinking about like how could I use this to.
Yeah.
How can we use this to free up teachers' weekends? Because I'll tell you what, if kids are using it for easy, you know, like, oh my goodness, use it for what it's there for.
Okay, I got one here, but it's I can't copy the text. Just like I'm trying to see if I can get one I can copy the text. Samples of proficient writing in fifth grade. Okay, I got one here. Oh man, I'm curious to see what's going to happen here.
You're going to ask it to score it?
Yeah.
All right, this is live on air.
Yeah, literally. Okay, so I'm going to share again.
Yeah.
Okay, so I found this text online. I don't know what it is. But there's an actual text version here in this study or whatever, so I can take it. Okay, so here is a text written by a fifth grader. Okay, stop. Okay, please assess it against the criteria of, let's go see what this thing has for criteria.
So narrative writing?
So, yeah, so. idea of ideas, organization, voice, sentence structure, fluency. Score each rubric out of 5. Ideas, 3 out of 5.
No way.
The texts are fairly clear, but they can be more focused and developed.
Wow.
They describe a series of events that happened to them. The text lacks clear organization. The writer jumps around a bit from one event to another.
I'll tell you what, that's good. That's good feedback.
Yeah.
As a writing teacher,
right, for years. That was the hardest thing to say. Like, what do you tell the kids besides, you know, in third grade, writing is pretty tough. Oh my God. I'll tell you what, I'm gonna show this to the language arts teachers.
More focused, clear, and fluent. And it's okay. So but wait, let's see. So it gave it 3 out of 5, 2 out of 5, 3 out of 5, 2 out of 5, 2 out of 5. And this person gave it, I guess it was out of 4 on this one, but 3 out of 4, 3 out of 4, 3 out of 4, 3 out of 4. So this was like a 3 out of 4. Okay, wait. So that's a little harsh. Grade it again, but be a tad bit more lenient. Here's a more lenient assessment. You can train it to be better at, to match your, you know, your criteria. Score 4 out of 5. So now it's giving it 4 out of 5. It's great.
Wow.
If I was still a teacher and I was grading papers, I know what
I'd be doing. Boys and girls, everything's got to be typed from here on out.
Yeah. Well, you can take a photo with your iPhone. And so
I was just going to say, oh man,
these scores actually match that rubric pretty well.
Yeah, they do.
Well, you would think, I feel like a teacher would be more sympathetic than just a straight computer grading system. You know, like the teacher knows the kids.
Yeah.
Teacher could, you know, oh, well, they tried, you know, maybe they could see the effort or the improvement from September. Mm-hmm.
But that's wild how.
But then you could say.
You just asked it and.
Yeah. Since September, include that in the assessment. You can do that too, Joe. I'm just saying. What's mind blowing here is this: is the fact that you can converse with it.
Right. Yeah, that's. I'm going through the gambit from like amazing to scare to like disbelief to this is amazing to this is trouble.
Yeah. Well, what's crazy is that they just launched it out of the blue.
Yeah.
No word to the wise, like this exists, and that's kind of wild.
So how's it linked back to Elon?
The founder and CEO of this is Sam Altman, who ran for like a decade Y Combinator, which is the most successful startup incubator in Silicon Valley. So he's really like all involved in tech over there. And the co-founder with him, on paper anyways, is Elon Musk. Yeah. And you kind of expect a guy like Elon Musk to just put this out in the world.
Right. And
to hell with the consequences. Right, like. That's right. Yeah.
That's wild.
That's
yeah.
Mind blown.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
It's super wild. But teachers need to be thinking about how they can
use this.
There's huge potential for
teachers
to save so much time. I saw an example of a special ed person on Twitter who was using it to write IEPs as well.
Our teachers spend days on IEP writing. Days.
You think of shorten that to 15 minutes.
But again, you have to have that. You have to take a mindset of, are you going to be afraid of it? Or are you going to embrace it and learn how to
incorporate it?
And the more use it for you, the better you're going to be at teaching kids how to use it for them.
Right.
And the better you're going to know its limits and design assessments
that,
you know, aren't easy to answer with this.
Right.
So I think that like as a teacher, everybody should be experimenting with this right now, just like what I just did here in 15 minutes. Like, imagine if you spent 3 hours instead of 10 minutes, like we just did.
Right.
The amount of, you know, skill you could develop quickly at using it effectively.
Imagine if your school had an in-service tomorrow. Oh, wait a minute. We do.
What? Yeah. We know what Joe's doing tomorrow in school.
Well, there's a lot of articulation time. So
I might guess what? I'm sure our internet filter is not going to have you getting anywhere near
that.
Schools are blocking it left and right.
I was going to say, like, they may not even, I mean, I don't even know if they are up and aware on it yet, but
our school has a heavy blanket to begin with. So you're right, Ron. I'd be surprised, I guess. But I say,
if you want and your students want to circumvent it, there's a Google Docs plugin where you can ping it from Google Docs and that won't be blocked, probably.
Okay. So put the link in a Google Doc and have them.
Now you add a Google Doc extension to your Google Doc and you can query it right from your Google Doc and it'll write right into your Google Doc.
Oh. They are so bad. Holy crap.
No, your reactions to this have been priceless, man.
<It's> amazing.
I know, and I'm like, I don't like the video game stuff. I don't like being online. For the classroom, I feel like you have to because that's the world they're living in.
Yeah,
I know we said that before, right? Video games. I'm not a gamer, but the kids are. So I definitely talked to them about it. But that's like, it's wild. That's
the kids all know about this. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Been all over TikTok.
Well, I watched.
There's even one kid. There's a kid who connected it to a 3D printer. And so he's having ChatGPT pop out text and it's holding a pencil on the 3D printer and writing it in handwriting on paper.
And that's
that's beautiful.
That way you can hand in a handwritten paper, but it's actually written by ChatGPT.
I would never even think of that. Like,
no, that kid is genius.
Yeah, that's pure inventiveness.
God.
Yep.
What's that called? That's like a Rube Goldberg machine.
Yeah.
Oh God.
But it's wild. What, you know, some of the things we're going to see from this is like, I asked it to write a lease just to test and it was a good lease. Think about like lawyers.
Writing a contract.
Yeah, right. I had it. What was the other thing I had it write that I was like, oh man, this can put people out of a job. You can have it, you can have like psychological conversations with it, like telepsychology.
Oh my gosh.
And they've done studies with AI as chatbots and and it's really good at just like listening and mirroring your feelings and people are having breakthrough moments, talking to the machine. And so there's just some really like unanticipated consequences coming down the line here in terms of, and maybe this is a good like conclusion here.
Right.
Think about the job disruption that is going to come from this and think about what that means if you're a kid, if you're 9, and you see this happening right now and like all of these jobs are disappearing, maybe your parents' jobs,
right?
Like think about how that is going to completely change their perspective on the world, like and what they want to be good at and what they want to learn from school, like
right,
it's mind-blowing.
Right. I mean, this thing's writing high quality papers, so why do I need
high quality marketing blurbs about
right? So
it goes back to my neighbor's a pilot and he's a colonel. He's made it so high up. When he started flying, he said at night they flew by the stars, which was freaking always amazed me. So I said, so you must love all this computer. He goes, I hate it. He goes, because if you don't know how to fly by the stars, what's going to happen when that computer goes down? So it's almost like the kids now, they don't know how to tell time without looking at the Chromebook. No one knows how to read one of those. What are they? Analog clock. This is the same thing. Why do I need to learn how to write a 5-paragraph argumentative essay when I can type in, hey, this is the topic? I remember doing book reports, reading the back of the book. This is so much better. Yeah. So much better.
Well, and we're typing it in, but you could just do, you know, text to speech too. Speech right. to text.
Yeah.
You could just like say it on your phone and then they'll type it in for you. And like, you don't even know how to, you don't even need to know how to write.
Right. Right.
You could just talk to it.
God. So now it's not only, we don't need cursive. You don't need print either.
Yeah. You don't need keyboards. Like, let's
keep. Yeah. Home row. Right. Yeah. Man.
So anyways, we're, this is again a conversation in a conversation.
Yeah, but. Yeah. This may again wind up, the last episode I broke into two. This may wind up being broken into two as well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean,
you can start the second one at what's ChatGPT?
Who's Chad? And what is this?
And what is this PT that he's doing?
He's got PST? GPS? There's so many acronyms. Is it my SGO? I don't even know anymore. I don't even know. Yeah, that was wild, though. That was...
Hey, Sean, thank you so much. I mean...
My pleasure, guys.
It's always an awesome time talking to you. Yep, and, you know, just thanks for
everything. Back on soon, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go.
We appreciate it.
It's a brave new world out there, guys. Be careful.
Yeah. And we didn't plug Classcraft, but... You know, people check out Classcraft.
Yep. Yep.
Classcraft.com, right?
And I'm happy to be having these conversations and people hearing about them. Doesn't all have to be about Classcraft. So,
yeah, I appreciate it.
Put a link or whatever. But
yeah. Oh, yeah. They're we'll definitely, believe me, Classcraft will get tagged.
Cool. So, no problem. Thank you so much, guys, and good luck. Good luck spending all the rest of the evening on ChatGPT.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Cheers, guys.
Take care and have a good vacation.
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
Teacher nerds, knocking on your door. Open up, let's take your teaching further than before. Give it a try, don't be shy, there's nothing there to lose. Worst thing that happens, kids get pain on their shoes. We're talking teacher nerds. I'm talking teacher nerds.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Keep up with every new episode by subscribing on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or anywhere you listen. When you subscribe, be sure to give us a review and tell a friend. Visit us at teachernerds.com, follow us on Twitter at Teacher Nerds, on Instagram at Teacher Nerds Podcast, or email us teachernerds@gmail.com. And remember, we're nerds with a Z. Most importantly, thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds.